It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, this program is live. Why would you ask? It really, really is. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. Yes, that's where you go if you, for instance, would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, that being 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm happy to be home. Back in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Yes, yes indeed. This is the 16th day of July 2019. And, you know, I've got a trip report because that always happens when I go out on the road. But before that, of course, this program always begins with gratitude. Because this program does not exist without your determination that it continue to exist. Right? And by the way, if there's anything weird with the audio, my apologies. We had a power outage earlier today, and it necessitated a shutdown, and so things may be really, really, well, you know, weird, because it got started back up. Something's always a little different when I get back. For instance, today we're looking for my, not my, but the pop filter that goes in front of the 15-year-old Electrovoice RE20 microphone, and it's got a little articulating ball that fits in a socket, kind of like a hip joint, and it rotates through, and, well, damnedest thing.
Well, Bob.
It's gone.
Well, it probably popped off when Dobby was in here working on the studio. So.
Okay, well, I'm not being mean.
No,
I mean, these things just happen, dear. I'm just happy to be home and be back in the lovely sight of you.
Oh, and I love you too, baby. I missed you.
Yes.
And I'll find your pop screen. And audio was weird on Bill's show today.
I know.
We actually had like a family gathering. Everybody could hear the tech.
Yeah, I was in Bill's house while Bill was starting the program. It was kind of cool.
So see, it just makes community. It's these little blips and glitches that make us real.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love you.
Hi guys. I love you all. Go ahead, Bob. I'll find your pop screen in a little
bit. Yeah, okay, cool. You know. Pop filters is cool. But, you know, it doesn't mean the microphone doesn't work. It just means that, I don't know, I'll probably pop a few more peas. Steve in New York asks, Dobby, you have a house elf? Well, Agnes sort of considers herself to be the house elf. These things. Yes. I can't leave socks laying about, you understand. But anyway, no, it's good to be home, and this program does begin every evening with gratitude, because you keep this little independent, non-capitalist attempt at radio on the air. And so thanks to our subscribers. Thanks to Timothy, and thanks to Glenn, and thanks to other Timothy. Thanks to Brock, and thanks to Reinhard over on the Virginia coast. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you to Robert in California. Thank you to Matt in California, and to Ralphs up in Wisconsin. And thanks as well to Sandra, to Kat, to Greg, to Gary, to Kay. Thank you, one and all. And with that, I can say that we are $30 away. $30 away from meeting Chris in Germany's Welcome to Philadelphia challenge of last Friday. And, the way that works out is if that is met, the fundraising goal will fall from 730 immediately to $400, which is a big deal. So we're at 730, $30 knocks it down to 400, and then we'll be off and running for this this is the middle of July. So thank you, everyone, and hey, new subscribers are always happily welcome. Oh, God, here we go. Oh. Thank you, everybody. Flavio wants to know, pop filters? They have a filter for that? How cool. You learn something every day. I did not know that, but that explains the plosive pops. And a laughing smiley emoji. Yes. And, you know, one thing that it isn't, it's not something that you pour, say, Coca-Cola through. No, it's not a strainer. It's a little mesh disc that goes in front of a microphone, and somehow or another, through the magic of physics, it keeps you from popping your peas perpetually. You see what I mean? Thank you very kindly, Steve in New York, adding a challenge on top of the remaining $30 from Chris's challenge. $15. So $30 knocks us down to 300 or 400 to go, and meeting Steve's challenge will take us down to 370 and get us started. And it would be wonderful to get started, and because this is the halfway mark of July, and well, we find ourselves where we find ourselves. I had a magnificent time, and thank you to all of you. I had a magnificent time in Philadelphia. I'd never been there before, and learned things I didn't know. I didn't know, for instance, that the convention, until I went to the candidates forum, I did not know that the convention center, it's a huge complex. It is seriously huge. Sits on land that used to be part of more of Philadelphia's Chinatown. And Chinatown is delightful, and it was a good 3x2 blocks bigger until they took that land away under, I guess, eminent domain to build the convention center. A member of the Philadelphia City Council at large told us that. She was Asian American. She is Asian American. And she said that the land where she was speaking was stolen from her fellow Asian Americans in the Chinatown of Philadelphia. Of course, you know how my brain works. I heard stolen, and I thought, yeah, let's talk about some stolen land. Let's talk about the people who inhabited the general area for, 15,000 or so years. And talk about stolen land. Not to take anything away from the fact that people were dispossessed for the building of that convention center. Because, well, and one of the things I learned is that in Philly in the next few years, they expect what was $35 a day parking to go up to $70 a day, because usable land in Philadelphia is rapidly disappearing with, gentrification and development. Being as I am the country mouse who occasionally goes to the city, I don't think about things like that much. I've got a falling down, ramshackle, 81-year-old house that sits on an acre of rather pleasant ground in the middle of, of course, West Virginia, where 99% of America would never want to live. But there it is. I guess, you take an acre like this and you drop it in any major American city, and some capitalist will try to figure out a way to build a skyscraper on it and then charge hedge fund billionaires $500,000 a square foot for an apartment on it. Because affordable housing, we're not so good at that these days. But we've got a lot to talk about for this Titanic Tuesday. I was on the road all day yesterday, so here's how that worked out. I took Chris to the airport to fly back to Germany, and she made it home to Germany just fine. Although, jet lag from hell, but made it back okay and in one piece. So it was about 2:15 to 2:30. When I left the Philly International Airport and started toddling on down I-95. And during Friday on the front porch, there had been mention of Ocean City, Maryland. And I thought, having a little, just to be rather blunt, having just a teeny tiny little bit of fuck-off time after all the work that went into being there, that might be nice. So I thought, hey, all right, I'll go down to Ocean City. Because, you're that far. I mean, there's the Delaware River. It's big. It's huge. How far can the beach be? Well, I learned something. It must be a trick of physics or interdimensional space folding or something. But I found out, and I never knew it before, that although when you look at it on the map, Delaware is a little teeny tiny place, as it turns out, I mean, we use Delaware, for instance, and don't think that this didn't pass through my mind, driving through these broad, flat fields, grow a lot of corn in Delaware, they do. Some soybeans, too. But as I drove through there, I thought about the fact that when we talk about mountaintop removal and how many mountains have been blown up in West Virginia, the fact of the matter is there are more mountains that have been destroyed in Appalachia by mountaintop removal coal extraction than the surface area of the entire state of Delaware. And I always looked at that and said, that's a whole state. That's a lot of square acreage, but it's a smallish state. I mean, you could, in fact, fit Delaware inside West Virginia, and we're not that big. But it's a pretty place, especially this time of year. Verdant, blue skies, great puffy clouds floating like ships above the land. And that sensation that you get as you get near the coastline, that you're just running out of planet. But son of a gun, like I said, it's I don't know if it has something to do with folding space or the Spacing Guild or anything like that, but I found out, having made a decision to go down there and just spend a few hours screwing around and then just get up the next morning and drive on home, I found out that Delaware, when you go to drive through it, is roughly the size of the state of Texas. I drove forever. It was a spur-of-the-moment kind of decision. I'd actually gotten down and crossed out of Pennsylvania through Delaware and just across the line into Maryland. And Maryland itself seems rather large. When I was going on the way up, I think I mentioned when I went from I-70 on to I-695 in search of I-95. I'm not sure, but I think the everybody who lives in the state of Maryland decided to get on 695 at the same time. We moved very slowly. Well, okay, damn it. It had to happen sooner or later. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, you may not be aware, but the Vogon constructor fleet is going to build a hyperspace highway through your little one-acre lot in West Virginia in the not-too-distant future. The plans are on file at the planning office on Alpha Centauri. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Especially if you've seen that UFO miniseries over on the History Channel that talks about the recent sightings by pilots who are not crazy of weirdly behaving unidentified things in the sky. But I saw a word on an exit sign. And one of the great pities of a lot of my travels is that there's never time to stop and investigate things, but this time I stopped and investigated. I saw an exit for Elkton, E-L-K-T-O-N, Elkton, Maryland. And it, ping, did something inside my brain. And there was, my brain said, you know that place name. And indeed I did. It goes back to a childhood story that was told in my family. The short version of it is, and this is a quote, Mama made bullets in Baltimore. It has to do with the fact my dad said that, you know, because at the time the NBA franchise was in Baltimore, not Washington, and they were the Baltimore Bullets, not the Wizards, and eventually the bullet got taken away because that was really not a great nickname for a team. But Mama made bullets in Baltimore. And it had to do with the fact that when she graduated from high school in 1943, and my father did as well, he immediately went off in the draft to fight the war. But as is often overlooked, less so now, but was it that my mother, along with millions of other women, went off to fight the war in their own way, too. So an 18-year-old girl from the hills and hollers of West Virginia went to Elkton, Maryland. And I can only imagine what the bus trip was like back then. Positively nauseating, probably took 3 days. No interstates, remember. She went to Elkton, Maryland, and went to work at a place called Triumph Explosives. At Triumph Explosives, it had started out as a fireworks factory, but since they were already making things that go boom, the United States government looked at Triumph Explosives and said, congratulations, you're an artillery factory now. And so they were, and an industrial park was expanded there in Elkton, Maryland. People came from all over. And they made that 40-millimeter shell that was used, I think, by the Navy in anti-aircraft guns or some such. We had one growing up, a dud, of course, but that was a hell of a projectile. And so she worked there throughout the war. And it's sort of a personal little odyssey. So I drove the scant few miles into Elkton, Maryland, stopped at the gas station and filled up the lawnmower, rental car, Nissan Sentra. And a fellow was parked there, and I just, he rolled his window down, and I said, you from around here? And he said, yeah. And I asked him if he could tell me where that old plant had been. I asked exactly the right person. And he explained to me that if I went back up to the light and turned left, all those woods that I would see on my right and all the way down to the corner and turn right again, those were where that plant had been. And he said there was also a wartime cannery for canning K rations for the troops. And that it was all gone, and that it had been sort of reclaimed by nature. In situations like that, nature, it appears, is much better at reclaiming things than, say, coal companies. But let's leave that aside. He said, I deer hunt in there. And he said, if you go in and stomp around, I mean, there's no trespassing signs or anything, but if you go in there and stomp around, he said, you'll find the old concrete foundations, and you'll find, he said, every now and then while I'm in there, I stumble over an old shell casing. I knew exactly what that would look like. So I drove, and I went in, paid for my gas, and told the lady at the counter what I was about, and she said, yeah, my grandmother worked in there. The other guy had said, my mama worked in there. None of the people I saw or spoke to said their daddy did. Their daddies were all off at the muzzle end of the war, while a whole bunch of mamas of the future were at the breech loading end. So I had that little... I decided not to go tromping around in the woods. I didn't have my wood tromping boots on, and figured I probably didn't have bail in case they decided to arrest the hillbilly for trespassing that they didn't have any signs up for. But I was in the same space as someone who would go on later, much later, 20 years later, to be my mother, and had not a clue what life had in store for her. And it touched me deeply. Because we tend to think of people as units, when in fact we are fluid processes traveling through time. Had something happened and I had been transported there, or she had been transported to my time, I probably would have recognized her. She would not have recognized me. For I was on up the line in her timeline. And it touched me deeply. It set me to pondering hard, which is part of why I decided to go on down to the beach and just think a little bit and percolate and ponder what the last few days had been, because I had been walking around in the seas of history in Philadelphia too. My goodness gracious. If you want to just get immersed in history in the United States, Philly is the place to do it. The goddess of irony was at work. Oh, yes. Chris and I walked down toward Penn's Landing. And while Ben Franklin's house is no longer there, they have at least marked the place where Ben Franklin's house was. And they've put up some sort of, in a remaining structure, they put up a sort of an interpretive museum space. It was closed, however. It was supposed to be open during those hours. But Chris noticed it first, and then I began laughing merrily. Because there was a sign there that said, Ben Franklin's Philadelphia History Interpretive Center closed today due to power outage. Like I said, Chris started laughing first. I followed suit. That's right. The building that houses the history of Ben Franklin, who discovered electricity, was closed because the power was out. You just can't make stuff like that up. Oh, and serving this evening as the Horn's ad hoc research department, a little information on that 40-millimeter gun. The Beaufort's 40-millimeter gun, often referred to simply as the Beaufort's gun, is an anti-aircraft autocannon designed in the 1930s by the Swedish arms manufacturer A.B. Bofors. It was one of the most popular medium-weight anti-aircraft systems during World War II, used by most of the Western Allies, as well as some captured systems being used by the Axis powers. A small number of these weapons remain in service to this day and saw action as late as Bush War I. Well, and they built, I found out talking to the guy, they built a series of dormitories, sort of little duplexes that have since been repurposed. He advised me not to go there. He said, they'll see your license plates, and that place is full of heroin addicts and meth heads and crackheads, and you don't want to be there. Probably get shot at or mobbed or robbed. I took him at his word. But then I guess, I decided I needed a little bit of pondering time. Yeah, Jack in Shreveport. I guess society should have gone with Nikola Tesla's tech. Yeah, I always remember the fact that in order to prove the better nature of his idea, Edison electrocuted an elephant in Niagara Falls, New York, or maybe Buffalo. I think it was Niagara Falls. Some guy that out, Thomas Alva Edison. So I told Siri that I wanted to go to Ocean City, Maryland, and she put me on the route and sent me back into Delaware. And that is how I came to find out that Delaware is apparently, when you're not looking, it unfolds itself to become the size of Texas, because I drove forever. And I finally got there about, 6:30. In time to watch the sunset. And it was a brilliant, beautiful blue sky day. And I enjoyed it immensely. There just wasn't very much of it. Big, broad, beautiful beach. It's not the white domino sugar sand of the Gulf Coast, but it wasn't shabby. Based on Steve from Georgistan's recommendation, I tried the French fries on the boardwalk there that they only give you salt and vinegar for. And tell you, don't ask for ketchup. We ain't got any. They, too, were not shabby. Decent, even. So anyway, the next day, which was yesterday, I got up and found out that, indeed, Ocean City, Maryland is a long, long way away from my little, from the magnificent Kincaid Mansion here in the hills and hollers. And got back at precisely, and this was the weird part, kind of creepy. The directional system told me I would pull into my driveway at 9:27 p.m., and I wasn't even trying to cooperate. But at 9:27 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time, there I was, in the driveway. So that's a little bit of the trip report. I would love to go back to Philadelphia with nothing to, with no constraints upon my time, and just spend all that time wading in the waters of history. Because it was just a grand experience in that. And yes, on the last day, Chris and I made it out to Bartram's Gardens on the Schuylkill River on the other side. Pretty industrial out that way. A lot of brown fields, a lot of collapsed infrastructure. But in that one little 45-acre spot of ground that they've managed to preserve, again, a boatload of history. So I fired up FaceTime while I was there, and since she couldn't make the trip, I walked Agnes all around the botanical garden that was started by her grandfather, America's first naturalist, arguably America's first environmentalist. He walked all over the eastern United States, well, over then the colonies, discovering new plants and sending them to the King of England and an associate of Carl Linnaeus in Sweden for classification. Some of his stuff still grows in Kew Gardens in London. And got Agnes a t-shirt and a jar of honey, because she's so sweet. A jar of honey that was made by bees gathering nectar on the property. And again, just felt the press of history all around me. It's like, it's, you feel it when you're attuned to it the same way you would feel, oh, I don't know, changes in the barometric pressure. You can feel that sometimes. But then, well, you know what happened thereafter. Oh, and I mentioned Friday how pissed off I was about the $110,000 measly dollars that the state of Maryland decided to save. Save! By closing the Geologic Exhibit Museum there at Sidling Hill on I-68. It's a beautiful formation. And it was, as I said, it was an opportunity to introduce people to science without beating them over the head with it. It's there right in front of their eyes. You can explain to them. But they shut it down and turned it into a Maryland Welcome Center and Veterans Memorial in order to save $110,000 a year. And what re-aggravated me was when I realized what that $110,000 was. That was a shitty little salary for three human beings, plus the unemployment and the workers' comp and the Medicare and the Social Security contributions that the employer has to kick in. That's it. They threw three people out of a job because the state of Maryland, which appears to have enough money to burn a wet elephant, was worried about $110,000 stinking dollars. More dollars than cents. Pennywise and pound foolish. So there are a lot of other details from the trip. I talked to a lot of interesting people. If you've been listening, you've heard it all. It's all up for podcast. I found out about a campaign to make chickens' lives better. I found out about an organization that's dedicated to having better foreign policy. And yes, finally, the candidates showed up on Saturday, at least four of them. Kirsten Gillibrand sat down for a panel discussion with Marcos Moulitsis and somebody I've never heard of, neither of whom were particularly good at asking questions, who lobbed softballs mostly. And then Julian Castro came on. He was polished and professional and good. And then the height of the evening, or the afternoon, Elizabeth Warren spoke. And I had never seen her speak in person to a live audience before. She was impressive as hell. Now, I've seen Bernie speak on more than one occasion. And frankly, she has a better manner and a better ability to convey information and to create a warmth and a sense of simpatico with the audience than anybody I've ever seen, quite possibly up to and including the all shuck shit kicking populism of Bill Clinton. And the room went wild for her. And again, I think with things like this, that forum, our side would be better served if a few harder questions were actually asked. Because she mostly fielded softball questions, too. But she was good. And you can see how talking to people, as compared to the verbal stylings of the orangutan, that she would, she might possibly mop the floor with him. The other candidate who was there was Governor Jay Inslee of Washington. Of course, easily half of the people gathered together in that room didn't know, because they got up and walked out as soon as Elizabeth Warren was done speaking. Now, not that I miss manners or anything, but I thought that rather rude. Because the thing with having all these candidates, and you know, for the other, God, what, 21 candidates? Well, I guess it was their loss that they didn't send anybody to even set up so much as an informational booth for the people who were there. That was the highest attendance of any Netroots Nation that they've ever had. And nothing. Joe Biden, nothing. Bernie Sanders, nothing. Beto O'Rourke, nothing. Pete Buttigieg, nothing. And nothing's all the way down. But I thought it a pity that so many people didn't bother to stop and listen to Jay Inslee. Because in a world of all things being equal, in which you factor out things like race and gender. Oh, by the way, Kamala Harris, nothing. If you factor out issues of race and gender, and you take into account only real world experience and policy qualifications, then it becomes pretty obvious that Jay Inslee is probably the most qualified person of all those people in there to be president. Yes, more qualified even than Joe Biden. because while he was vice president for 8 years, that's a position that, well, what did John Adams say about it? The most useless position ever created by the mind of man, something like that. Go to a lot of funerals when you're vice president. Jay Inslee, on the other hand, has had experience both in the House of Representatives and very successfully as the governor of the state of Washington. But because I stayed and listened while a lot of people got up and, I don't know, headed for the bars or whatever, I found out something. Jay Inslee, patiently, even though he said that the centerpiece of his campaign is the climate crisis, well, old Marcos Melitzis and whoever that was, that I don't know who she was, peppered him with questions about foreign policy and various and sundry topics, and finally they condescended. He said, well, okay, now you can talk about the climate crisis if you absolutely have to. And he shined. Because what I didn't realize, I mean, I know that he's worked on climate issues in the state of Washington, but I didn't realize that Washington has pretty much the hottest economy of any of the 50 states right now. And he made a point of noting that the economy is running as well as it does in the state of Washington, not in spite of progressive climate crisis-driven legislation, but as a direct and proximate result of it. That says something for his abilities. Not that half of that room knows anything about them, because, well, they treat politics like, I don't know, American Bandstand. You know, can you dance to it? Does it have a good beat? And do I want to put up posters of the candidate on my bedroom wall like it was something out of fucking Tiger Beat? We got to listen to them all, because one of them is going to be the only hope we have of saving this nation and removing the nitwit Nero from office. Jay Inslee is impressive as hell. Could he beat Trump? I don't know. I don't know if any of them can. I don't know if any of them will get much of a chance. I continue to fret, and Chris and I discussed this, I continue to fret if Elizabeth Warren is the nominee, and I would have no problem whatsoever with her if she is. I continue to fret that it's just going to be day after day, well, hour after hour, day after day, week after week, month after month of fake Indian war whoops and cries of Pocahontas. And we talked about, you know, how do you inoculate a campaign against that kind of sewage? And eventually Chris said, well, maybe the first time he said Pocahontas, she should turn around and look at him and say, bub, you've been credibly accused of rape, sexual assault, and sexual abuse by no less than 20 women. Shut up about the Pocahontas, because I'm going to talk about your rapes every time you say the word. That might work. That might work. No hard questions for Kirsten Gillibrand about those years that she spent bragging about and this, bear in mind, with little children in her house, her own little children, she bragged about keeping not one, but two loaded rifles under the bed that she and her husband share. I'm sorry, but that really is a sticking. That's a don't touch it sore place for me. Because being in this, doing what I do, and you who share in the program, you know the almost countless number of stories we've had about little children who went in and found mommy or daddy's freedom protector, and the next thing you know, their little 2-year-old baby brother or baby sister's brains were splattered all over the living room wall. But nobody ever really asks Kirsten Gillibrand about that. And see, if you're going to sit there and talk about the horror of babies in cages, which it is, and talk about how much you care about children's issues, it would probably be a good thing not to have ever bragged about keeping not one but two loaded rifles under your bed in case the ISIS MS-13 liberal commie pinko anti-NRA people decided to home invade your home invasion house. Because it creates a sort of incongruity. I mean, maybe, I mean, if since we were talking about sort of the fluidity of time earlier, maybe if one was to go back in time and ask Representative Kirsten Gillibrand from a more or less hillbilly district in upstate New York, how to protect little children in cages at the southern border, she might tell you back when she was cashing checks from the NRA that we should put a loaded rifle under their beds or give more guns to the Customs and Border Patrol officers who are in charge of their torment. But that's just me. I'll be honest, I was surprised to see that neither Marianne Williamson nor Tom Steyer showed up for Netroots Nation, or Andrew Yang, because that event is supposed to be the marquee event for progressive Democrats in the United States on an annual basis. And I wish it was. Or I wish that people treated it as such. As you may have heard Rick Smith mention, it's no CPAC. Then again, maybe the Republicans are just better at organizing things than we are. I don't know. Sorry, Will from Chicago says, I would advise her to take that advice, Bob. I'm not sure which advice that was, but and if you'd care to enlighten me, I'll sort the rest of that out. Going all the way back to the bees and the honey. Jack in Shreveport says, I may be behind the curve on this one, but I heard on The View today two things on bees. Dow Corporation has been allowed to proceed on a bee poison, and the government is being directed not to track bee population statistics. Both Whoopi and Joy are beekeepers, or maybe it's Sunny, not Joy. Well, you know, that's what we need. A better, more effective way of killing bees. Why the hell not? But of course, not just bees, but people. Which segues very nicely with a story that I have been sitting on for this Titanic Tuesday. Talk about a manifestation of Titanic intellect. If you live in rural America, as I do, when a whole bunch of stuff goes off the shelf at one time, you know that there's either a desperate need for it, like, say, oh, when West Virginia American Water Company poisoned 300,000 people and we couldn't keep bottled water around here in sufficient numbers. But here's a weird one. Stores in Boone County, West Virginia, Madison is the county seat. It's an hour and a half from here. Stores in Boone County began to notice that wasp spray was flying off the shelves. Well, this is the season for wasps. And whereas I have a certain amount of almost loving respect for bees, you know, bee stings you, she's given her life to protect what she understands to be a threat to the hive, the community. The stinger stays in you, and her little insides come with it. She does not use her stinger lightly. Wasps, on the other hand, it doesn't work that way. They can sting and inject and sting and inject and sting and inject and sting and inject, and they're just vicious little bastards. So wasp spray began flying off the shelves in Boone County. The wasps are no worse this year than they have been in years past. I mean, there might be some statistical change, but it's not like a horror movie or anything. No. Because hillbillies, I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but we're a resourceful lot when it comes to catching a buzz. See what I did there? Buzz. I'm proud of it. Sergeant Charles Sutphen of the West Virginia State Police said that enterprising hillbilly drug addicts have taken to huffing wasp spray, thus giving an amount of truth to that line that I've used for oh so many years, crazier than a sprayed roach at a deep decon party. Yes, yes, the hillbillies have learned to huff wasp spray to catch a buzz. One woman interviewed by WCHS TV8 said, "In my opinion, drugs are so bad around here, it's so available to people, and then all the time trying things that new that we wouldn't even think about." Well, Sergeant Charles Sutphen said, "We're seeing this here on the streets in Boone County. People are making a synthetic type of methamphetamine out of wasp spray." He went on to describe the physical effects as erratic behavior and extreme swelling and redness of the hands and feet. "From what we're being told, if you use it, you know, you might use it once or twice and be fine, but the third time when your body hits that allergic reaction, it can kill you. It's a cheap fix, and you don't know what their overall result of their usage is going to be." State police in Boone County are working closely with poison control and local medical centers to determine best treatment for someone using wasp spray as a drug. And they're trying to get the word out to the broader hills and hollers communities. Wasp spray. Don't know why they'd settle on wasp spray instead of, say, ant and roach or spider. Maybe it's because the wasp spray, is that the one that kind of creates a It's got a sort of a funnel shaped nozzle, and it sort of kicks out a fog. I guess humanity has always sought the next buzz, from the first time that a human being stood next to a burning cannabis plant and went, "Dude, you know, Og over there talking to Kronk and Kronk hungry. Kronk who eats seeds. Kronk licks salt too. Kronk have munchies. And the other species do it too. But wasp spray. I mean, on the one hand, there's a level of curiosity there that you have to be impressed by. On the other, it's curiosity that's not the good kind. Anatole says, "What does Zod think?" Well, Zod already passed out under the burning bush. Zod not know till morning. You know, who was the first person that ate a psilocybin mushroom? Who was the first? What motivated somebody to eat the little tiny cactuses? What? Well, whatever it is, it apparently exists at a genetic level. And it will also drive you under certain circumstances to think that maybe some wasp spray might not be a terrible buzz, you know, for a peyote. Thank you, VT Blom. Peyote. I don't know why. Where'd that word go? Peyote. Peyote buttons. Yeah, who looked at that and went, tasty? Or ayahuasca, for that matter. I don't know. We are, if nothing else, awfully doggone interesting. Randy points out the old saying, curiosity killed the cat. Randy notes, but even cats have more sense than that. You'd like to think so. Really, you would. But then again, we also hillbillies also go into old coal mines in search of copper to steal. And there's, you know, there's larger stuff that attaches to that. Because it's the economic question of why people are driven to such lengths. So that's my little trip report. And of course, there's ever so much more to talk about. You know, I was somewhat disconnected over the course of the. I was focused on what was going on in the space there at Netroots Nation, but I was getting my updates on a regular basis. And so I saw the sleazy, filthy, dirty, nasty shit that Julius Geezer was engaged in. And so we'll be talking about that in fairly short order. And there's stuff beyond Washington, D.C. and beyond the bad behavior of Nitwit Nero to look at, listen to, talk about. And we'll do all these things. Flavio with a note says, glue, paint. Why not wasp spray? By the way, I lost it when you led up to the word dude when the first human burned some bud. Raffle. Dude. It's the universal stoner word, dude. Ron in Raleigh says, Zod says, kneel before Zod, conqueror of Krypton. Oh, I know. Sorry about the low volume, Jim. Not a lot I can do about it. Especially not without my pop filter. Albert in Rhode Island says, those two black female Trump supporters now have a TV program. That would be Diamond and Silk. It's on a second-rate cable news network. I've not watched it yet. Ah, the second-rate cable news network would be One America News. One N away from being Onan, who spilled his seed upon the ground. Uh-oh, I think I'm in trouble. Kyle says, Bob, I hate to break you bad news, but my 10-year-old brother walked by just as you were telling the story about the people of West Virginia from this story about people using wasp spray to get high. I'll do my best to explain that not everyone in your state does that kind of stupid stuff. Poor kid doesn't know whether to laugh his ass off or cry for the people who need help so much that they're resorting to that. You know, brother of Kyle, I don't either. Scott in San Diego, wasp spray. They prefer huffing wasp spray to, say, ant or roach spray because of its piquant bouquet. Yeah, that may be true. Yeah, you know, I tried some of that ant and roach spray, but dang, it just didn't. It was a lot harsher than the wasp spray. I thought the wasp spray had a better aftertaste. The other moderator, Ron in Raleigh, says, Marcus Melitzis, fellow moderator with Cheryl Conti. She's the CEO of Do Big Things, a digital agency specializing in new narratives and new tech for a new era. ... Whatever the fuck that means. Well, there was a whole lot of whatever the fuck that means going on there. And speaking of budgets, Ron says, the Trump regime is about to kneecap another U.S. government agency. Employees had until midnight last night to decide whether to move to Kansas. So far, only 27% of the USDA have decided to drag up and decamp to Kansas. So much for the USDA. We don't need no stinking USDA. Don't need no food inspections. And it's about time for trichinosis to make a big comeback in the hog population. What do you say? Make America gag again. You know, whether it's wasp spray or taking apart the government of the United States one piece at a time, those are the things that sort of always make me look up and go, I don't think we're going to make it. If you apply the old adage about a chain being only as strong as its weakest link. Wasp spray. Yeah, Randy says, one of my friends calls Trump Mr. Military High School, but he seems more, he's more like at the elementary school level. He's over in that having a hard time learning to read class, I think, most likely. Flavio reminds us, what are all East Coast riverboat gamblers named? Dude. So we've made it through an hour of this Titanic Tuesday with ever so much more to discuss. And I have thanks to send out to Anatole for meeting part of Steve's challenge, which will Steve clarified if that challenge is met, that knocks out the $30 that finishes off Chris's challenge, and then we'll only have if we can get $5 more, we'll only have $400 to catch up even here in the middle of the month of July. Oh, I know. Ron reminding us, folks here about use canned air to cop a buzz. You have to give your age to buy a can. Oh, I got carded to buy a freaking lighter the other day. Week before, I got carded to buy a knife in Wally World. I don't think it's because we're becoming a more careful society, and I don't blame it on the trial lawyers like all the Republicans do. No, why? I mean, I don't know the answer. Do they have canned air huffing problems and wasp spray huffing problems in societies that aren't quite so dysfunctional, let's say old Denmark, the Netherlands? I'm leaving Britain out of the list for a while because I had a brief conversation while I was in Philly with a couple of aging subjects of Her Majesty the Queen. They were on a bus tour of the eastern U.S., and I made a point of making sure that I didn't give away my politics. And I said, "Well, I guess it'll be Prime Minister Boris Johnson soon." And the one woman said, "Yes, yes. At least we're hoping." At which point I said, "Zip it. Don't say anything, Bob. We're hoping." Because if Labour gets in, well, that's almost Scottish, isn't it? If Labour gets in, it will be 5 years. No, I'm still Irish now. Well, the bottom line is that she said it'll be 5 more years, or it'll be 5 years of pure Marxism. To which her cigar-chomping husband nodded sagely. Of course, the Labour Party in the UK probably could fuck up a one-car funeral, because they seem, if you follow the news over there, they seem to be doing that, no kidding, all by themselves. Oh no, they still sell Bic lighters, Randy. Randy says, "I don't smoke, but do they even sell Bic lighters anymore, or had too many of the Bic lighters explode?" No, they still sell them. You can't adjust the flame anymore. That was where the problem came in. But they still sell them, and you have to present ID to purchase them. You don't have to present ID to purchase Cheese Whiz or canned spray cheese. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting to find out that the hillbillies have taken it to the next level by starting to huff, that Nabisco Cheese Whiz or spray, the stuff that, yeah, Because I'm sure if you do it just right, all the cheese will go into the one corner of the plastic bag, and the propellant will be right. Dude, you want to snort some cheddar? Dude. I mean, why not? So being as how it is a Tuesday, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And I look forward to it. I know you do as well. So let's check in with them. At least maybe they're not, you know, huffing wasp spray. And maybe in the 6 minutes or so that it takes that we'll scrounge up the $5 to finish off Chris's challenge and meet Steve's. And then we'll go to work on that $400 that we need to raise so that we're not looking at some terrifying $1,000 whatever at the end of the week, okay? Okay. Thanks.
It's Tuesday, July 16, 2019.
The tropical storm threat, as you know, is over.
New Orleans dodges a bullet, but Hurricane Barry's impacts are not over by a long shot. U.S. marks its wettest 12-month period on record again, plus...
We kind of sincerely regret the power disruption and the impact it had on the lives and businesses of the people of this great city.
Major blackout in New York City exposes infrastructure vulnerabilities.
All of that exposure and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Folks, really, America can't maintain our infrastructure, can't update our power grid. We can't get off oil, can't even secure our elections. Here's an idea. Instead of going to Mars, how about we just stop treating Earth the way Led Zeppelin treated hotel rooms?
Oh, Led Zeppelin slam. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I hope that Hurricane Barry served as a warning for the future, but somehow I have a feeling that it won't. Am I too cynical?
No, unfortunately, I don't think you are. However, the city of New Orleans did dodge a bullet from Hurricane Barry, which made landfall on Saturday as the first hurricane of the 2019 season. The rainfall fell well short of early predictions of a deluge that, combined with Hurricane Barry's storm surge and the historic ongoing floods on the Mississippi River, did have the potential to overwhelm the city's pumping systems.
And the city's levee system.
Indeed. Here's New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell.
We absolutely made it through the storm. Beyond lucky, we were spared. It seemed as those bands moved closer to New Orleans, it seemed to just go around us.
But Barry's dangerous torrent of rain finally did arrive on Monday, with the National Weather Service issuing flash flood warnings as Barry's remnants traveled north and east into other states. The lower Mississippi River has been in flood stage since January 6th. That is the longest flood event on record in the U.S., and the floods may not recede below flood stage until the end of summer.
Wow, really?
Really. And that's a problem because earthen levees on the river were not designed to withstand the intense pressure of floodwaters for so many months.
So there's a fear that those earthen levees could just give way and the Mississippi River takes over?
Pretty much. But even before Hurricane Barry made landfall, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration had announced that the United States had just had its wettest 12-month period on record. If that sounds familiar, it should, because it beat the previous record that was set just last month, which beat the previous record that was set just the month before. In recent years, studies have found that hurricanes and rainstorms are dumping more rainfall in the United States, a sign that climate change is making tropical cyclones and storms wetter, in line with what climate scientists predict we'll see with man-made global warming. NOAA also confirmed in a new report that costly high-tide flooding is spiking more often along U.S. coasts because of rising sea levels. Those are causing more damages to streets, septic systems, homes, and buildings much more frequently than in past decades. The frequency of nuisance or sunny day flooding now hits coastal communities twice as often as it did just 20 years ago. Nicole LaBeouf, acting director of NOAA's National Ocean Service, said, quote, quote, "We cannot wait to act. This issue only gets more urgent and complex with each passing day."
Yeah, well, have some patience, Ms. LaBeouf. We are going to have to wait and wait and wait, I'm sorry to say.
Meanwhile, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh have not been as fortunate as New Orleans. After a deadly heat wave and crippling drought over the last month, the annual summer monsoon rains finally materialized, but the extremely heavy rains triggered flooding and landslides that have killed more than 100 people and forced more than 2 million to flee their homes. Finally, the cause of that big blackout in New York City's Midtown Manhattan on Saturday evening is still under investigation. Equipment failure is the likely cause, according to Con Edison Electric Utility officials. They have, however, ruled out high demand and a cyber attack or a physical attack.
Now, if it actually was a cyber attack, do you think they would have told us it was a cyber attack?
That's a good point. Don't know. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo criticized the utility for being slow to upgrade its aging infrastructure.
It is unacceptable. We need a better power system. We need a better power grid. The system has to be designed with redundancies.
Con Ed workers are rushing to make repairs in advance of an upcoming heat wave. And deferred maintenance is a problem across the entire nation's rickety electric grid as extreme weather events increase in frequency and intensity.
Oh, I'm sure everything will be all right. No rush. Take your time. Have patience. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, my apologies for all the audio is sketchy here, and let me see something. Yeah, there we go. Turn that off. That'll make life a little better. Been kind of clippy because I think we got some settings reset after the power outage because, you know, clear blue sky, power goes out, that kind of thing. Welcome to, you know, Appalachian Power. So my apologies. Brother Deacon Asa let me know. And I've seen it, but it's been sort of sketchy and hit or miss. And meanwhile, I'm getting emails from people saying, "Volume too low, Bob. Volume too low." Well, we managed not to finish off Steve's challenge, which would have finished off Chris's. So we'll continue to hope that we can bring in that $5, so that we'll be down to just $400, and hope the best after that. By the way, note from Steve pointing out the reason I suspect they don't have huffing problems in Norway or Denmark, they have a solid social safety net. And they have legal and probably affordable ways to get high naturally. I don't think weed's legal in Norway and Denmark or the less dysfunctional countries. I think it probably has something to do with having a sense of human worth, of having a purpose, a sense of belonging to a greater community, all of which Republicans have worked hand over fist to eliminate in this country. One of the things that we observed there in that session with the four presidential candidates was the fact that the fact that there was a lot of talk about the awfulness of Donald Trump. Oh, he's just terrible. Horrible, horrible, terrible, very bad Donald Trump. The only problem with it was that in that context, it was pretty obviously not a Donald Trump problem. And this is where we face or we run the risk of a real mistake. And that is that in assuming that if we just get rid of Trump, you know, we're all going to turn into Annie and we're all going to sing, "The sun will come out tomorrow. If Trump is gone, you can be sure things will be sunny again." No more singing. I mean, well, don't make me. It's not a Trump problem. It's a GOP problem. It's a Republican problem. These are most of these are problems whose birthday happens to be January the 20th, 1981. And that means that for anybody younger than 38, you have never known a world that didn't have these problems. If my math is right. So, if we talk about Republican disgust with the idea of government, well, that goes back to old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
The nine most dangerous words in the English language are, "I'm from the government, and I'm here to help."
That wasn't Trump. Say what you will of Donald Trump. Donald Trump did not begin his presidential campaign in the home of the Klan. Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, did. County fairgrounds of Neshoba County in Philadelphia, Mississippi. August 1980. 39 years ago to the day in just a few weeks. Deregulation. Taxing waitresses' tips. The firing of the air traffic controllers. Yeah. And the problem is the people who made it possible for him to be president. You know, those so-called Reagan Democrats. Their children are in many ways the Republicans that we're supposed to be appealing to by nominating Joe Biden. Steve in New York says, the problem is us. I think it's also a Democrats don't vote problem because the Republicans do. You can take that to the bank anytime you want, every day and twice on Sunday. I guess this is on my mind in part because I got home and I didn't have much time, but it was while I was in Philly, I didn't have much time for my filthy little morning habit. But there it was when I woke up this morning, and there was Joe Scarborough blathering on about how America was such a much better place under everybody before Trump. It's not true. The Republican Party has been empowering these people, what we know now as the maggots, since at least 1964. How many generations is that? And they have been transmitting that intergenerational wisdom far better than our side has done. And thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Samson and to our dear friend Jude in the Great Northwest. Thank you, Samson. Thank you, Jude. We've broken the ice. Chris's challenge is finished, and we are down to only 370 to go to get even with the midpoint of the month. Thank you, Samson. Thank you, Jude. I worry that as long as we persist in this notion that Trump is the only problem, that he is the problem as opposed to a symptom of a disease that has gone systemic and is metastasized all over our body politic, we don't have a chance to ever defeat it. But you know what's been going on in the House today? And when I say what's been going on in the House today, I mean what's been going on in the House today as a response to the... I'd almost bet you that he's torn his clothes off and run around the Oval Office a couple of times by now, and we just don't know it yet. But he's getting nuttier and nuttier. No, that implies that there's something here. No. He is getting more dangerously insane day by day by day. And with his attacks on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, telling them to go back, to leave the United States and go back to their countries. I'd like to say it's shocking, but if you've been paying attention to the Republican Party for as long as I have, there's nothing shocking in it. And it's not particularly Trumpian. It's Republican. Now, those four brilliant women didn't take that shit, and they sent it right back at him. But he doubled down. And so today, in the House of Representatives, with the participation of Speaker Nancy Pelosi, they introduced a resolution condemning his remarks as being racist. The maggots responded as though it were John Quincy Adams standing up to introduce a resolution in favor of the abolition of slavery in the 1850s. It yielded, in particular, this little moment. And by the way, this is further proof that Nancy Pelosi knows what she's doing, and she knows how to do this. And Doug Collins of Georgia, I guess, was appointed to handle the disloyal opposition.
Every single member of this institution, Democratic and Republican, should join us in condemning the president's racist tweets. To do anything less would be a shocking rejection of our values and a shameful abdication of our oath of office to protect the American people. I urge unanimous vote and yield back the balance of my
vote. I was just going to give...
Okay, so the reason she had to pitch her voice up a little bit is because Doug Collins was over there having kittens with crocheted tails because She said the president's racist remarks or racist tweets. Because lo and behold, the Republicans put a rule through that said you can't call the president a racist. And they tightened it up back when they still had power. Well, you heard the words as well as I do. She didn't call the president. She didn't say Donald Trump is a racist, even though that is an absolutely true and factual statement. She said the president's racist tweets. And when you tell four women, all of whom are women of color, to go back to their own countries, that's racist. He wasn't suggesting that Nancy Pelosi go back to Italy. Of course, just to keep the ledger clean, it should be noted that three of the women were born in the United States and are citizens by birth, and that the fourth, Ilhan Omar, has been a citizen of the United States longer than Melanoma Trump, who came over here under fraudulent pretenses and has used position and privilege to get her parents over here as well, using the laws that exist in this country and which Donald Trump wants to trash to keep out, you know, brown people. And by the way, along the way, you know, Melanoma Trump very likely engaged in some escort service activities, and that's how she met Nitwit Nero. Just talking facts here. So that's why Nancy Pelosi had to raise her voice. What I'm interested in here, though, and what I think will interest you, is what comes next when Doug Collins of Georgia stands up to express his deep and abiding sense of umbrage and outrage at the desecration of the civilized, gentlemanly rules of this here governing body. Okay? Yeah. Here we go.
And people, I urge unanimous vote.
Thank
and
you.
Yield back the balance of my...
I was just going to give the General Speaker of the House if she would like to rephrase that comment.
I have cleared my remarks as a parliamentarian before I read them.
Which she did. And then she ignored Doug Collins as if he were less than the dust beneath her feet, turned her back, and walked away. And that is how you do that. That is what you do when you're dealing with these goddamn Confederates. She's good at her job. I know everybody wants to impeach Donald Trump yesterday. So do I. But I still say it will be a far better effort if it is done when there is something that is undeniably proven to stand as an impeachable offense. That is not, however, to say that, for instance, his Twitter shitstorm is not an impeachable offense. It absolutely is. The framers make clear that breaches of presidential decorum, breaches of presidential trust, are impeachable offenses. They fall into the high crimes and misdemeanor category that they left somewhat intentionally vague. If, for instance, somebody was to, say, intercept one of his emails in which he agrees that he, gosh, sure wishes he could make this month's Clavern meeting of his local Klan chapter. And we found out that he'd been a secret Klansman all along, you know, because his daddy was a Klansman. You know what? That would be an impeachable offense, too. It absolutely would. Ron in Raleigh says, this morning, while listening to My Filthy Little Habit, there was a panel discussion about Trump's weekend tweets. A bunch of folks left voicemails saying that there was nothing racist in the dolt's tweets. I am convinced that unless Dimwit Donnie used words like kike or heeb or spick or wetback or ginger, his lickspittle followers would still say he isn't a racist. Well, here, let me put an addendum on that. If he used that word that has all the same letters as ginger in it, the maggots would say, well, ain't nothing wrong with it. Them people use that word all the time. If they can use it, so can they. So, that was part of the battle, but only part. It went on for, there was a hell of a lot of the people's time that was spent on this. Not complaining. What I find interesting is that the Republican Party was willing to let this be the hill they were willing to die on. Four Republicans voted in favor of the resolution. One independent, who used to be a Republican, Justin Amash. Fred Upton, also of Michigan, voted in favor of the resolution. He had condemned it earlier in the day. You might recall Fred Upton is the Republican that Joe Biden supported over his Democratic general election challenger in 2016. Yeah, Fred Upton supported it. And three other Republicans, one of them, I believe, Will Hurd of Texas. Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania and Susan Brooks of Indiana, Tallahassee. But every other Republican in the House of Representatives declared that they were A-OK, buddy, with these sleazy, filthy, xenophobic, racist tweets sent out about attacks on four individual members of the United States House of Representatives who are as oath-bound to defend the Constitution as is Donald Trump and are actually doing far more to defend the Constitution than Nitwit Nero has ever even contemplated. Not that I like to use the word contemplated in relation to anything that happens between his ears, because it's way too big a word and entirely inapplicable, as is the word think or thought. So the resolution passed. Non-binding, no force in effect, but you know what else it shows? It shows a way forward toward hot impeachment. Yeah. Ponder that for just a little bit. There's one person in the House of Representatives who probably has a greater degree of expertise and recognition of things racist than any other member. I speak, of course, of Representative John Lewis. He got a chance to speak on the floor today, and his words should be heard, should be shared, and should be remembered.
Speaker.
Reserve.
Gentleman from Georgia, reserve. Gentlelady from Texas.
I'm pleased to yield 1.5 minutes to the distinguished gentleman from Georgia, Representative Lewis.
Gentleman's recognized for 1.5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise with a sense of righteous indignation to support this resolution. I know racism when I see it. I know racism when I feel it. And at the highest level of government, there's no room for racism. It sows the seeds of violence and destroys the hopes and dreams of people. The world is watching. They are shocked and dismayed because it seems we have lost our way as a nation, as a proud and great people. We are one Congress, and we are here to serve one house, the American people. Some of us have been victims of the stain, the pain, and the hurt of racism. In the 50s and during the 60s, segregationists told us to go back when we protested for our rights. They told ministers, priests, rabbis, and nuns to go back. They told the innocent little children seeking just an equal education to go back. As a nation and as a people, we need to go forward and not backward. With this vote, we stand with our sisters, three were born in America, and one came here looking for a better life. With this vote, we meet our moral obligation to condemn hate, racism, and bigotry in every form. Thank you.
Gentlemen, need more time?
Yeah. That was history speaking. And every word he spoke was true and factual. We need to remember from a historical standpoint that even among those who opposed slavery, there was a sizable faction whose answer to ending slavery was, go back to where you came from. Abraham Lincoln, until he was straightened out by Frederick Douglass, was a subscriber to the go back to where you came from school. No less than Abraham Lincoln. But the transatlantic slave trade had been outlawed years previous. And so by 1860, there were very few slaves who had a there to go back to, because they were, in fact, as American as any other human being, having been born here. And yet the white people screamed, go back to Africa. When if that were reasonable and rational, then there would be every reason to tell them to go back to Scotland, go back to England, go back to Germany, go back even to Sweden, France, etc. And the only people who have the right to tell anybody on this continent to go back somewhere are Cherokee, Navajo, Hopi, Ojibwe, Cheyenne, Cree, Choctaw, Chickasaw, etc. Go back. And that is why the 14th Amendment says that if you're born here, you are by God America. An American. And it doesn't say just the black people who were born here are citizens. The people who drafted and ratified the 14th Amendment recognized that this was an argument they never wanted to have again. If you come here, if you make your way, if, then you're an American too. Welcome. It's part of why those words appear on the tablet held by the on the base of the Statue of Liberty. You know, you're tired, you're poor, you're humble. Huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Go back. There is no back. Anybody telling Melanoma to go back to where she came from? After all, she really doesn't care, do you? Anybody telling Ivana to take her little brat Ivanka and go back where she came from? I wonder what could possibly be the difference. How about skin color? Again, I repeat, Ilhan Omar has been a citizen of the United States longer than that woman who became the first lady ever to remove her clothes in exchange for money paid by perfect strangers to see her naked body. Go back, Melanoma. Go back. But no. No. Like I said, I drove over the wild vastness that was Delaware. A lot of empty land out there. It's mostly busy growing corn. Some soybeans. But there's room enough in America. There's room enough. Steve in New York says of John Lewis, "He is, to my mind, the closest thing we have in the country to a living secular saint. In addition, because of what he has given to this country, even if he wanted to read the warning off a bottle of cough syrup, everybody should listen." Hear, hear. Go back. Donald Trump's mother was an illegal immigrant. She came here from that little tiny mud puddle of a gene pool on that godforsaken little island in northern Scotland on a tourist vacation visa. And then she stayed while she went husband hunting and met another first generation America in Frederick Christ Trump. Citizenship for me, but not for thee. As I wandered the streets of Philadelphia, I wondered, down in the old city area, I wondered if they felt that gnawing sense that the shit was about to hit the fan long before Lexington and Concord. if it was like that feeling that I mentioned at the beginning, that feeling of a change in the barometric pressure, as if something was about to give way. Because it does feel that way. It feels more that way with each passing day. And it's deeply stressful. Eric Swalwell, who recently bailed out of the presidential race, thank you. Thank you for doing that. It was the right thing to do. We need a lot more to follow your lead. Eric Swalwell stood to speak in support of the resolution condemning Donald Trump today. And he quoted the President of the United States and used the phrase, shithole countries. This once again caused Doug Collins to have a baby right there on the floor of the House of Representatives. Because under the civility rules of this here House of Representatives, you can't be saying shithole countries. It destroys the civility of our civility proceedings here.
1 minute.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. We have an opportunity today to condemn or condone. Birtherism is racist. Saying a Mexican judge can't be fair because of his heritage is racist. Saying immigrants from Mexico are rapists is racist. Saying there were good people on both sides in Charlottesville is racist. Calling African countries shithole countries is racist. And telling four members of this body to go home is racist.
Gentleman will state
do you think it's not racist? The
gentleman will state his point of order.
Do you think it's not
racist? The gentleman will suspend. Gentleman will state
his
point of order.
Is that what you're saying right now, Mr. Collins?
Gentleman will suspend.
Mr. Collins, is
gentleman
it not racist
from...
to say these things? Because you can say that right now.
The gentleman from California is out of order. The gentleman from... gentleman from California shall suspend. For what purpose does the gentleman from Georgia rise?
I make a point of order. The gentleman's words are unparliamentary, and I request they be taken down.
Order. Clerk will report the words.
Now, bear in mind, as you may have heard the hollering going on, Eric Swalwell did not use those words. He quoted the President of the United States. This is part of a discussion that we have in our community here. I despise that word that has all the same letters as ginger. But sometimes it feels like it's necessary to use it when you're quoting someone who was using it. Because you need to convey the ugliness and the hatred of the person using the word. Some of this civility bullshit goes back to a time when a Republican, I think it was Bob Dornan, California, referred to the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, as a draft dodger. And they began, it's almost like you cannot use a pejorative adjective to describe the President of the United States, which is a further indication of the, it's like a lèse majesté inside the House of Representatives, which, and such a concept of lèse majesté has no business in the House of Representatives. Consider. If Donald Trump used that word that has all the same letters as ginger, and if someone quoted it on the floor of the House of Representatives, the person quoting him would be subject to having his words stricken from the congressional record, and a punishment comes with having your words stricken from the congressional record to the effect that you are forbidden to speak in that body for the remainder of the day. It's like you're getting a timeout for being bad, when in fact there is no bad behavior involved whatsoever. It was merely a matter of quoting the President of the United States. But you cannot even use the President's own words against him. That's a hell of a note, isn't it? Well, eventually, at the urging of his colleagues in his caucus, Representative Swalwell withdrew his quote of Donald J. Trump that involved the brown word. I'm not so sure that that rule is a good thing, because personally, where behavior like this is concerned, I have the notion that confrontation is called for. And you may have heard Representative Swalwell touch on that when he said, "Do you believe the word is not racist? You've got an opportunity right now to say so. Say it." I think that probably would have been delivered far better had it been delivered about an inch and a half from Doug Collins' godforsaken, racist, Confederate fucking Republican nose. If you think that what Donald Trump said is not a racist statement, tell the world. For the world is watching. What's that? Steve in New York says, "Oh, my Lanta. He said the word shithole. Bob, my stars and garters, get the fainting couch. Democrats need to say these things. Why? Because we have to say them until they become synonymous and associated with Trump. We need to pound them into the head of the animus populi until they become part of the zeitgeist and continue to pound them nonstop and unceasingly." I came up with an idea on Friday on the front porch this past, and that idea was to start referring to every Republican with the nickname Stormy, because for as long as they defend his racism, for as long as they defend his misogyny, for as long as they defend his xenophobia, his various bigotries, his ignorance, his stupidity, his general peevish hatefulness, then they're doing the same thing for him that Stormy Daniels did. So in this instance, the proper reference would be to Doug Stormy Collins. Because for all intents and purposes, Doug Stormy Collins spent his time today in the House of Representatives ideologically fellating Donald Trump. Maybe that's the trick. Bigger words. Use lots of big polysyllabic words, and the Republicans might just not know what was being said. Jesus H. Christ. But he withdrew shithole, because you can't, this is a new one for me. On the floor of the House of Representatives, you can't say that the president said shithole. Isn't that about enough to make you eat dirt and run rabbits? Got a note coming in from Lady B. I'm listening to you describe how Nancy Pelosi was able to conduct herself as she put it on congressional record that she thought the president's remarks were racist. She's old school. Her monthly check is guaranteed. She can be civil. She has absolutely nothing to worry about. The refrain from the song Something to Believe In by Poison keeps going through my head. The lyric, "You take the high road and I'll take the low. It's too personal to take the high road sometimes. It hurts too much." No snark, sincerely. Let me tell me how you would handle the President of the United States telling you as a duly elected House of Representatives member. Now imagine if you've heard that a few times in your life and know exactly the venom and hatred behind exactly what that means. I know what it means, and I was born in Colorado. My father and mother born in the South. We go back five generations. We literally have nowhere else to go. I'm not mad. I'm pleading, because this all hurts. There are folks who wish to see us minorities sidelined forever, forever subservient, forever underpaid, forever undereducated, and largely oblivious to just how shitty we seem to get treated. No, seriously, Bob, you're educated, sensitive, and wise. Explain to me how in 2019 I live in a country with an openly racist president, one who encourages hundreds of thousands to behave the same way. I'll try to figure out the right way to feel about and thus channel my emotions. Reassure me there are folks humane enough to stop this before the trucks and trains start coming. Otherwise, I don't think I could stand it. That's what I mean. Walking through the air of planet Earth in the United States right now feels like being 250 feet under the ocean and the pressure enough to begin to crush bones. And that's me, a white guy, saying it. I can't even start to go where to even think about the things that that are in Lady B's head, heart. I've spent about a third of my life, more than a third. Actually, we'll say close to a third, involved in the struggle for what I describe at the end of every program here as the struggle for environmental justice and human dignity in Appalachia as a white guy. Again, no comparison. But in the course of that nearly 20 years, I can't tell you the number of times I've been told to go back where I came from. Some of them I've had the pleasure of looking at and saying, my people were here before the first fucking coal company ever showed up. They can leave. I'm staying. I remember a time when I told Senator Shelley Moore Capito about the time that I watched my granddaughter, then an infant in the cradle, startle and awaken and cry when a mountaintop removal blast shook the house. I remember telling Senator Shelley Moore Capito that that was the kind of thing that would make a parent or a grandparent, a loving caregiver, furious. And how would she like it if it happened to her grandbaby? Of course, it never will. And she looked at me, my white hair and my white beard and my white skin. And she said, "You don't support coal? Where are you from?" I said, "Senator, my people have been here since before this place was a state and since before this country was a nation. Where are you from?" And she smiled a smarmy, syrupy smile. And she said, I've never met anybody from West Virginia who doesn't support coal. And all I could say was, you don't get around much. There is an automatic assumption on the part of power, on the part of hegemons, that they have the right to determine who is and is not of the body. It's a sort of analog to religious orthodoxy. And they have to maintain that power because they cannot abide the challenge, because the challenge, the first time a challenge goes by without response, is the beginning of their end. That's that moment when they become like those fossilized mastodons in the La Brea tar pits out in L.A. or in Waco, Texas, for that matter. They are stuck. They don't know what to do. They know they are powerless to do anything. And they are bawling their death cries to the universe. Hegemonic power will not tolerate challenges. But the more you challenge, the closer you get to knocking it over. Lady B asks, tell me, how would you handle the President of the United States telling you as a duly elected member of the House of Representatives to go back to your country? Well, I know how I'd respond to it. I'd probably be censured or maybe even thrown out of the House of Representatives, because I would say, and I would not blame Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or Ayanna Pressley if each of them and or all of them at the same time said, hey, fucker, come here and say that within 2 inches of my face. Try it. And then, if he did, act appropriately. There's a reason that this country, for all of its velvet knee breeches and silken stockings, had to move quickly to outlaw dueling. At the corner of one of the streets on Lafayette Square is the Stephen Decatur House. He was a big old somebody or another. But he ran afoul of somebody that he had said in a court-martial that he was cowardly in execution of his naval command. There was a duel. Stephen Decatur lost, if I recall correctly. Not only did Alexander Hamilton die in a duel, Alexander Hamilton Jr. died in a duel on the same spot. Because those men, and, you know, men, were jealous of what they perceived to be their honor. And they were willing to defend it with their lives. I'm not saying that's a good idea. In 2019 America, we would probably cut the population in half, given the tawdry things that are said on any given day. But there is such a thing as fighting words. There are words that are so incendiary that by their mere utterance are the legal equivalent of a blow struck. And that's where we are now. The Republican, illegitimate President of the United States is hurling around fighting words. And there are, of course, as yet, no consequences. None. And that's part of what makes it feel like we're 250 feet under the ocean. With no pressure suit. So good luck, Lady B. Good luck trying to figure out the right way to feel about and channel your emotions. There may be enough people to stop this before the trucks and the trains start rolling. But here's the thing. It's not just us. There is there's a larger sense that this country is as bad as we think it is. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi got stiffed by the parliamentarian after she had already cleared her words with the parliamentarian. So the Speaker of the House was banned for speaking for the remainder of the day. But the fact of the matter is, he's not doing this simply because he's losing his mind and the spirochetes have won. He is doing this because it works. Because this country is that bad. Because there are that many bad people in this country. God, it was just a few years ago that Lindsey Graham said that Donald Trump was a racist, xenophobic bigot, and today, well, Lindsey Stormy Graham said that those tweets were no problem. Go figure. He's doing the bidding of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, you see. And they play to their racist base, the Emerys and Marvelines, nodding away in the matching Barca loungers. Irony? He went off the rails in a news conference or a press availability, airing his racist grievances against these four women in what was supposed to be a showcase of America. And you know what? It was a showcase of America. Because the maggots, like Hillary Clinton said, are deplorable. His comments are deplorable. It'd be kind of cool if deplorable was in the actual resolution language. But make no mistake, every Republican who voted against that resolution was waving a Confederate flag while they did it, and probably giving the Klan high sign to each other. Wow. What a day to come back to work. Rick Tyler has a nice gig working for, I think, MSNBC now. In a former life, he was a campaign strategist for Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America. Interviewed on MSNBC today, he said that in describing the tweets against the squad, they now have a name, the squad. Tyler said, right now the president is engaged in a very risky strategy because he's actually turning it into a binary, which I don't think obviously most Americans are comfortable with. And that is that you are either with a vile racist, and I don't say that lightly. The president has demonstrated over and over again, starting with the Central Park Five through birtherism, through the shithole countries and on, and now we're supposed to believe that he didn't mean to say go back to Africa? Trump is making this about race, and that is racism. And so, this is part of an overall calculation. And that calculation is that the American people are as vile, as filthy, as hateful, as racist as he is. Or that most of white America is. What was it, 48% of didn't vote? Something like that? Some crazy-ass big number. Some of them would have voted for Trump in 2016. He doesn't have to get all of white America. Some of white America. This little tiny corner of ramshackle falling down in West Virginia, acre in West Virginia, white America is not like that, does not hold that, finds that repugnant and hateful and disgusting. But all he has to do is have 50.00000001% of America be that nasty, that disgusting, that repulsive. Or, as happened in 2016, energize enough of them to leverage the Electoral College, which in itself has its roots, its anachronistic roots, in our filthy, slave-driven past. And someone has told him that he's got him. And if you watched all the Stormies today in that debate, well, he might just. Because none of those people would be there but for the people who support Donald Trump. I dare say there is not a Republican member of Congress who did not remain in office in 2018's midterms on Donald Trump's coattails. Whether it's Mo Brooks Les Brames in Alabama, or Louis Asparagus Gohmert, or Liz Dick in a Bad Mask Cheney, Steve Stormy King, Hal Stormy Rogers, on and on and on. Doug Stormy Collins, Kevin Stormy McCarthy. And this is one of the most sickening aspects of the argument. Well, no, it's racist to call it out for being racist. What? With the subject line, Dogshit Doug, with the remarks of Representative Dogshit Collins of Georgia about Pelosi supposedly calling Trump a racist, maybe that stripper that Trump married needs to go back where she came from, too. To hell with that Georgia redneck. Well, thank you, Mike. Mike in Cascadia says, brilliant show, Bob. Preach. Trying. By the way, the stress line is open if you want to jump in. 800-844-843-4676. 800-888-THE-HORN. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. Let's see. Yeah, Joe up in Cleveland says, did Trump tell Melanoma to go back to where she came from? Melanoma, please take your chained migration family and go back where you came from. Albert in Rhode Island says, they need to allow members of Congress to have duels when they offend each other. I need to do it right there in the well of the house. It reminds me of something in a sci-fi book. It was an alternate history book. George S. Patton was a Confederate general. He challenged a guy to a duel. The guy replied, okay, I accept your challenge. It means I get to choose the weapons. I want to use flamethrowers at 10 paces. Patton gave him an icy stare and walked off. Kyle says, wait a minute. You mean to tell me the great free United States of America, the sitting U.S. representatives can't use the president's own fucking words against him? Jesus, are they at least allowed to say harumph after they say, now, Mr. President, I don't think you should do that. It might diminish the great and noble office of the president and presidency. I don't know. It depends on the kind. Depends on whether you're saying harumph sarcastically. Watch your ass. So, I know. Randy says, the problem is, Bob, you're preaching to the choir. Look, you don't show... The church is not full of, sinners. It's full of church members. Preaching to the choir? No, preaching to the congregation. The sinners are out enjoying their Sunday morning. They're out smoking in the parking lot across the street at the strip joint. That's how it works. Dave in The Blind in Taliban, Indiana says, Bob, I speak as a student of history. Representative Lewis is more powerful than I've ever heard him. As someone who was almost killed during the Freedom Ride in the 60s when he was a young civil rights activist, his voice has a moral authority to an immoral power. I want to get it on a loop and play it in front of my father, who says, and I quote, I'm not a racist, I'm just conservative. What makes this first side for me is my dad wholeheartedly supports the behavior because he doesn't see himself as directly involved. We need to hang it around their necks, Bob, from Joe Scarborough, who enabled this guy, to Stephen Miller, the little Nazi that could, to my father, who taught me to see beyond differences, and now he turns his back, reporting from The Blind. And as noted, we're moving toward the final half hour of the program. And I wish I wasn't saying this, but I got to, or else, you know, we don't have a program. We got $370 to raise to be even with thus far in the month of July, $370. So, hey, how about 37 new $10 a month subscribers? No, it'd be lovely, but for some reason or another, no. But yeah, 370, 10 at 37, 37 at 10, 1 at 370. Ain't happening. 2 at 185. Beyond that, my head begins to hurt. But every little bit takes it down, takes it down, takes it down. And by the way, one last thing. Before I go to the phones, I'm not leaving the program. I'm not quitting early or anything. But just this. I saw an alert come across my phone that said, Beto O'Rourke acknowledges he had slaveholding ancestors. Well, fuck me dead. If you're white in America and you've been here and your family's been here since before 1850, odds are, especially if you come from English, German, or Scots-Irish heritage, especially if they... Well, no, I mean, this includes New York, New England. Like I said, I was particularly pleased that there's a substantial effort in Philadelphia to acknowledge and tell the history of that city's role in the slave trade. One of the things I mentioned, I brought a T-shirt and a book home to Agnes. A T-shirt and a jar of honey. I also brought a book home. It was called Stories We Know. And it's a little book of gathered information about the slaves on Bartram's farm. So, yeah, I mean, if that's become a thing, yeah. My wife is descended from slave owners. So am I. Hell, all I got to look back is two generations, and I got a granddaddy in the Klan. Doesn't make me a Klansman. Trump, on the other hand, his daddy was in the Klan, and he can't even acknowledge it because it hits a little too close to the fucking bone. Here's the next headline that I expect to see. Thomas Jefferson's descendants acknowledge that they had slave owning ancestors. The fuck? Of course. Thing is, that would be a bunch of African American people who had Thomas Jefferson as an ancestor. Yeah. And then, of course, there are the people who old Marse went down to the quarters, and they're descended from that little tryst one evening. And then there's the one drop rule and the very concept of chattel slavery. My God, how could you look at yourself knowing that you had fathered a child and that child was born to be a slave to someone else? How could you even remotely begin to try to justify it? But of course Jefferson did, as did probably millions of American slave-owning white men. and their wives, knowing that their husband's children were running around on the farm or the plantation, the place. What a rebuke. What a reproach. With the exception of a shockingly low number of indigenous peoples in this country, we are all, and I do mean probably all, some form of Creole mixed people. And so when I saw that headline, I thought, yeah, Jesus Christ, really? Beto handled it fairly well, but it's like in the present era, it's being presented as some sort of a shock or surprise. But DNA isn't destiny. Leah New York is forever reminding me of that. I love the past and I love my past because for good or ill, for a brief moment, somehow or another, they were those past people all the way back to Og and Zork were engaged enough in the present to have a care for the future. Each and every one of us on this planet is a product of that. I think the one person on this planet who contributed more descendants than any other is said to have been Genghis Khan. But it's worth thinking about. Randy in PA says, how come J. Edgar Hoover didn't get clobbered by the one-drop rule? Because he hid, Randy. He hid. He passed. P-A-S-S-E-D. But to look at a phone call from him is to have it become abundantly clear that, you know, that ain't white folks. I'm glad that we're finally having this conversation, though, because it is the beginning of some sort of informal truth and reconciliation that might eventually lead to something that vaguely resembles a healing before this country can tear itself completely to tatters. James in Illinois says, Republican asylum seekers, it should be no surprise that so many Republican apparatchiks keep finding their way to a new life. That party, founded by Fremont and Lincoln so long ago, ceased to claim them. There's a good laugh to be had when anyone seriously references the party of Lincoln. That party is dead. The latest person of this group of miscreants is a party of Jefferson Davis with an offshoot more closely aligned to that little villain from Germany, the guy with the toothbrush mustache. Goddamn cannibals is what they are. They'll eat your children. By Jove. That gets a cowbell. Can't take my cowbell on the road. I don't want to run the risk of losing it. And a cowbell for Lady B, too, although we usually reserve that for humor. Goddamn cannibals is what they are. They'll eat your children is what got that one for James. So with a little bit of time remaining in the program, and with me having filibobstered for 2 hours and 34 minutes, I'm sorry. Some conversation radio, huh? Let's find out who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Dave from the Blind.
Well, hey, Dave, how are you?
Much better, my brother, much better. As you know, things have been getting a little rough around here with my nephew's death and everything. But things are going according to plan. I thought of an interesting thing to do, and I may do it here shortly since both of my senators have offices downtown and I live downtown, is to walk in there and ask them for their help on tracing the Continental Air Force's command structure so that I can write a biography of it.
Oh, and no, don't do that, Dave. They'd have you arrested, buddy.
For what?
Wait, Donald Trump is
such an honest individual.
No, hold on. There's no for what in Trump America. The cops show up, they tase your ass, maybe pepper spray you. It's not a good day.
So I've got to lock myself in the blind here, you know. I mean,
No, just stay away from your local Republican Congress critter's offices. They're a mite tetchy these days.
Well, I mean, I don't understand this rule. I mean, I understand that comments made by members of Congress in the performance of their duty, they can't be charged, they can't be sued. But calling out racism and not calling Donnie a racist, but saying that his comments are racist or that they don't.
Nope. You can't disparage the sacred person of the president.
Well, you know, there is a divine Donald Trump Facebook page. I thought it was a joke. These guys, I mean, that's why I was in tears when I was listening to Representative Lewis. And that's a man who can stand with anyone in history and call it out, and I would dare.
Right, and see, he has the moral authority and power to call out Donald Trump, and that's why Donald Trump is never going to get within 1,000 yards of him.
But here's my point: if they're so butthurt about the mild comments that they had taken down, I would dare any one of those maggots to dare try and have Representative Lewis's words taken down. I mean, it's insanity, Bob. It's goddamned insanity. Thankfully, I have a Democratic congressman.
Do you?
Which pisses Donnie up one side and down the other because Andre Carson is a practicing Muslim. And he has been a practicing Muslim for years. And he is the first member of Congress to have called candidate Trump out on his comments. But I don't hear them trying to take Carson's words down. And he said it from the well of the House. I'm not living in my own country anymore, it seems. I mean, did Kafka finally get here and say?
Yeah, I know. Did we all wake up this morning and now we're bugs?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know, Bob. Fortunately, I have a good support system. You know, my ex-wife, Christine, and we spent the 4th of July up with my brother and sister in Muncie, and it was nice. Dad and I behaved ourselves. It didn't start a war, but
that's always a bonus.
That is a bonus. Well, I figured in the spirit that John Adams wanted us to celebrate the holiday, I figured why not? It's a party. It's the one day of the year the United States lets its hair down and...
Yeah.
You know? But we have to hang this around their necks. We cannot...
Well, this will not be encouraging to you, but the pearl clutchers and the hand wringers have already started. Let me find the guy's name here, or the person's name.
Oh, God.
It won't take but a second. It was on Chris Matthews' program, so, you know, kind of no surprise.
Yeah, well...
And basically, the bottom line is that this is a matter of Putin wins. What happened today was a win for Putin. Asha Rangappa. Pronunciation, my bad.
Yeah.
But she showed up on Twitter, rather, not MSNBC, and said, "Remember that what Putin loves most about Trump is that he's a disruptor. Combine that with the zombie-like loyalty of the GOP, and you get the shit show we're seeing on the House floor. For Putin, this is mission accomplished."
I tell you, Bob.
I just want to take a moment with that tweet, though, if I could, Dave.
Okay.
Because it's only mission accomplished if in fact it is. It's only mission accomplished for him because he thrives on chaos. Because the Republicans, zombie-like was her phrase, because the Republicans rushed to his damn defense. All they had to do was do the right thing, the moral thing, the ethical thing, the simple thing, and say,
Did
yeah.
Did you say only five or six Republicans voted for the resolution?
Five if you count Amash, four and plus one independent if you consider him an independent.
I count Amash as a Republican. Come on.
Okay, but
he
it,
left the
yeah,
party
one, but one of them, one cover. Of them, one of them was a Republican from Taliban, Indiana. A woman.
I'll have to look that up and call her office and congratulate her.
With all due respect to calling from the blind, you call her up and you congratulate a blind hog for finding an acorn.
Well, that's true, but. You have it's like training a dog, Bob. You got to encourage them.
Absolutely. Oh,
right,
baby didn't shit
right,
on the carpet
the right
this morning. Good baby.
Well, you know, Addison McConnell's too busy getting his belly rubbed by Vladimir. You know. So.
Yeah, and you know you might appreciate this. That this was a lovely little moment from earlier today. Chinless Mitch Stormy McConnell. See, I'm trying to use my own bit. Chinless Mitch Stormy McConnell showed up in front of cameras and took and got asked a question by a member of the press.
Resolution on the House, particularly after they watered down the reservation on.
Carl, let me stop you there. Mitch McConnell's going to take a couple of questions here. Let's listen together.
Policies and approaches with some of these Democratic members. That said, when the president uses such language that's so far over the line, regardless of what their points of view are or policies, doesn't that undercut your argument that these issues are a problem, that these policies, these approaches are a problem for the country? Doesn't that undercut your argument when you use
Well, it? Obviously, I think it's a good idea to focus on what our Democratic colleagues are up to. The Green New Deal, their version of it, would take away your job. Medicare for All would take away your private health insurance. And if they made any effort to pay for all of this, they'd have to go after the most productive parts of our economy. Because remember, the top 10% of taxpayers provide 70% of the revenue for the federal government. So I think this is a prescription for slowing America to a crawl. And I think it's also important to remember that most countries that...
Now, let's remember, this was actually a question about his racist, about Trump's racist fucking tweet. So McConnell's talking necessarily about Medicare for all is gonna bankrupt our America, and the Green New Deal is gonna make sure we ain't got no hamburgers to eat.
Ended up adopting socialism, did it by voting for it. As Margaret Thatcher once said, the problem with socialism is pretty sure you run out of other people's money. So, yes, I think we're better off.
That Margaret Thatcher, she were a funny one, weren't she?
To talk about the policies of our adversaries. And as I said earlier, and I think quite clearly, lower all this incendiary rhetoric. Everyone involved should...
Oh, look, both siderism when there's no incendiary rhetoric coming from... No.
Do that.
You're married to an immigrant who's a naturalized U.S. citizen. If someone were to say to her she should go back to her country because of her criticism of federal policies, wouldn't you consider that a racist attack?
He laughed. He chuckled.
Well, the Secretary of Transportation came here at age 8 legally, not speaking a word of English, and has realized the American dream. And I think all of us think that this is a process of renewal that's gone on in this country for a very long time, and it's good for America, and we ought to continue it.
But what was it racist for him to say go back? Was it racist for him to say go back to your country, saying those things?
As I said, the legal immigration has been a fulfilling of the American dream. The new people who come here have a lot of ambition, a lot of energy, tend to do very well and invigorate our country. And my wife's a good example of that.
Not exactly much in the way of an answer, was it, Dave?
Well, no, Bob, but, you know, as a disabled man, I have to give him congratulations because he's the first in his family that I've been able to find that's almost able to walk upright. So
hang on.
You know,
you get one for that, okay?
My first official cowbell. I appreciate it.
Mark it on the calendar, Dave. Mark it on the calendar.
I will. Okay, Bob. I'll let you go, man. I just wanted to check in and make sure you guys knew I was okay.
And we're glad you are. I was glad to hear from you earlier, Dave. You take care. Don't stay out of Republican congressional offices, okay?
Oh, no. Come on, Bobby. Never let me have any fun.
Well,
you're sounding more like Christine.
I know, but, bail money's such a pain in the ass these days. If I used my good primate brain to keep me from going trespassing around on an ancient spot of ground where my mother once worked, you can stay out of congressional offices in Taliban Indianapolis, too, can't you?
Okay, Bob.
All right. Goddamn Bob, ruining my fun.
Only for this week.
Okay, only for this week. Dave, you take care, buddy.
All right. You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, because Mitch Stormy McConnell couldn't quite be bothered to note that... Ilhan Omar came here seeking that same sort of dream that Elaine Chao did, and she didn't even have a whole bunch of shipping magnate money to buy her way into the new 90 states of Merca. Mm-mm. Nope. She didn't have a daddy who was a classmate of one of the guys who became the dictator of China for a while. I'm sorry, president, I mean premier, I don't know, what autocrat. Both siderism. Oh, go play in traffic, Mitch. Addison. As Randy, NPA, notes. And your father-in-law was a Communist Party official, wasn't he? Yes, by God, he was. Meaning Addison Mitch's. Mitch Stormy McConnell's. So a little bit of time left in the program. If you want to try to wedge a phone call in, that's cool. Both lines are open. Had somebody on the Skype side, but It just didn't last. So sometimes you got to hang on. But again, I had a lot to cover this evening, and I apologize for the long filibobster. But sometimes things like this are, well, they've got to be dealt with. We might as well just stick to the topic at hand, however, and share a moment with former reality television star Sean Duffy. I know who Sean Duffy is just because I'm terribly, terribly, terribly fond of the people who live in part of his district. He represents Ashland, Wisconsin. And he'd done come completely apart at the seams today.
This time I yield 3 minutes to the gentleman from Wisconsin, Mr. Duffy.
The gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized.
I appreciate the gentleman for yielding, and thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to note, at the start of this resolution, for the first three pages, I agree with everything. We have great quotes in here of our founders and American presidents who talk about the strength of this country that has come from immigrants and immigration, and I wholeheartedly concur. As we get to page four, though, I have significant disagreement. I would note that on page four, on the whereas, it's noted that Trump's racist comments have legitimized fear and hatred of new Americans. And I just want to make a point to my friends across the aisle, because in paragraph two, you note that it's committed to keeping America open to those who lawfully seek refuge and asylum from violence and oppression. Lawfully seek refuge and asylum. But I would note that just recently President Trump has said those who have sought asylum, had a hearing, and have a deportation order, you are all offended by that. You didn't include in your resolution those who had deportation orders issued, your opposition to them being removed. So you actually agree with us and President Trump that those who have lawful orders of deportation should be sent out of the country, just to cite your resolution. But I want to note, Mr. Speaker, that I've looked closely at the chain of three tweets sent out by President Trump. And in those tweets, I see nothing that references anybody's race. Not a thing. I don't see anyone's name being referenced in the tweets.
Now, I don't see where he calls anybody that word that's got all the same letters as ginger in it. I don't see it. I don't see his racism, because I choose not to see his racism, because all four of the women to whom he made reference are of brown skin, and he's never said that to someone with white skin. I don't see it, Mr. Speaker.
But the president's referring to people, congresswomen, who are anti-American. And lo and behold, everybody in this chamber knows who he's talking about.
Yes, they do. Did a Democrat stand up to say, you just called four members of this body anti-American by referencing the president calling them anti-American? I move that your remarks be stricken and you be forbidden from speaking for the remainder of the day. Because that was terribly, terribly, terribly unparliamentary.
Who are the anti-American members of Congress? He didn't say their names. He did not say their race. But he commented on what they view, how they view America. And we all know who he's talking about. I want immigrants to come to this country. But if you come to this country, shouldn't you love this country?
Who says they don't? Certainly no evidence that they don't. And once again, only one of those four is an immigrant to this country, and that person has been a citizen longer than melanoma, clothing or no clothing.
We all come here and see imperfection, and we work every week trying to make our country better. But to say I wholeheartedly dislike the country, the fact that I'm going to call the president an MF-er, good Lord, what has the institution become? And then to come to this floor and chastise the president for a couple of tweets when that's the language you use against him?
Yeah, it's just a couple of tweets.
That is rich, Mr. Speaker, that's the language that the left would use, and then try to call out the president who didn't cite a race or he didn't cite a name. I look at this, and I think we are all called to do better and be better. We should make this country better. But when I look at some who say, I believe that socialism is a purer form of government and a better economic economy over capitalism that has given us the freest, most generous, most prosperous country that's ever existed on the face of the earth. That we want to.
How'd that capitalistic generosity work out for the 1,000 West Virginians who died last year from poisoning induced by mountaintop removal? How's that generous capitalism working out for the children who have had their brains negatively rewired by the lead in the water in Flint that was a product of pure capitalism? How about that? How's that working? I mean, that's just a couple, but it's a start.
We want to trade this in for a system that has always failed. I think you're going to see Republicans push back against that, and I think many Democrats will push back against that, and I think that's what this argument really comes down to. And I'm going to one other note. I look at some of my conservative colleagues, whether it's Candace Owen, Diamond and Silk, Justice Thomas, who are...
The gentleman, please.
I yield back.
The gentleman from New York is recognized, Mr. Nadler. Before you go, let me again say, please direct your comments to the chair.
Mr. Speaker, I have a parliamentary inquiry.
The woman will state a parliamentary inquiry.
My inquiry is this. My colleague across the aisle just referred to members of Congress as anti-American. I believe that those words are defamatory, and I would like to ask whether that is appropriate for a request for the gentleman to take down his words.
The chair will not issue an advisory opinion. I have directed both sides to please address the chair, number one, and number two, I've asked that members refrain from engaging in any personality-based remarks. So the chair is not...
The person serving as the chair is Representative Emanuel Cleaver of Missouri, by the way.
Not going to issue an advisory at this point.
So a member can say that other members of Congress are anti-American, and there is no resolution for that? We would like to ask the gentleman to take down his words.
His words be taken down.
Is the gentleman making a demand that the words be taken down?
Yes. I am asking that the gentleman's words be taken down.
That, by the way, is Pramila Jayapal.
Mr. Speaker, I don't believe the request is timely.
In order for the words to be taken down, the objection has to be contemporary to the remarks.
I was trying to get the attention. Okay, Mr. Speaker, I will relinquish the point, but I just want to remind my colleagues that that is completely...
Jesus Christ! If you want to create a dictionary entry for IOKIYAR, this is it. Eric Swalwell quotes the President of the United States, has to have his words taken down, has to remove his words lest he be muzzled. The Speaker of the House quotes or refers to racist tweets by the President of the United States, and Doug Stormy Collins is right there to make sure her words are taken down. A Republican member, however, refers to members of the body of which he is a part as anti-American, and it's okay if you're a Republican. Wow. Wow. I am reminded of the fact that from time to time, our buddy Steve in New York reminds me that, well, they're better at us than this. See, at the first time when I mentioned, I said, wait, where's the objection? You have to be on your feet. You have to make the objection at the time the words are spoken. And I guess Pramila Jayapal was just standing over there waving and sending up semaphore flags and couldn't get the chair's attention. So, can't say, you can't quote the president using a dirty word. You can't say that he tweets filthy, racist things, even if he does it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But a Republican can call Democrats anti-American. A Republican can allude that members of the Democratic Party don't love this country. Man, that just beats cats fucking. So we're at the end of the program. Fundraising stands at $370. Be $570 tomorrow. And a last note, courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. At 99 years of age, former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens has died. At least he wasn't on the bench when he did it. Elena Kagan replaced him. Yeah, Jude's right. The third in line for the presidency got shut down and censored today in her own house. How about that? About that. And a brief note on the way out the door, and I know a lot of people feel this way. I have heard in the space of a few days now a phrase on at least three occasions talking about our effort to keep this thing on the air. It's a two-word phrase, and that phrase is donor fatigue. And the people who said it have every right in the world to say it, and this is not a criticism. But donor fatigue will catch up. And I apologize. I apologize for the fundraising. And we would not. I would not have heard that word three times in the last few days if it weren't for the fact that a relatively small handful of people keep this program on the air. And a lot of other people don't. More people can, more people listen to this program and don't contribute than do. If that's the case, I'd implore you to consider maybe, if you are able, deciding that maybe this program is worth less than, the lesser part of less than half of a McDonald's hash brown patty per day. Less than half of a McDonald's hamburger, no cheese, per day. And become a $10 a month subscriber. It would be mighty helpful to the people who are already carrying the program on their backs. And I try to thank everybody who does each and every time. But it would be nice to give some relief to the folks who are suffering that donor fatigue. Maybe think about that. So back tomorrow with prayer meeting Wednesday. God only knows what this latest kerfuffle will occasion on the part of the really nutty people among the maggots. Thanks to all of you who do keep the program on the air. Thanks so very kindly. Thanks to our to all of you who do listen to the program, participate however you do. I'm glad you're here. I want to enhance and expand the conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, head on .live, happily home from a camping trip. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. I'm so happy to be home.